Okay. All right. Well, welcome to Greek Club. Today we are broadcasting from End of the World Tower here at Concordia Seminary. The new creation is impinging. It's a beautiful day, and we're getting a foretaste of the feast to come. Except I would like mountains, please, in the new creation. And Missouri doesn't have any real mountains, but you can't have everything yet. As Mick Jagger taught us, you can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, you might find. That's right. Of course, I'm sitting here with mostly young guys who remember that was remixed or remastered. Some of us are old enough to remember when it was sung the first time. We are in Hebrews chapter 9, and we are at verse 20. We're talking about the sacrifices of the old tabernacle, the old covenant, as opposed to the once-for-all sacrifice of Christ. And we had a fairly long, it's a little bit of a complex sentence, verse 19, where the writer to the Hebrews described how the blood was sprinkled on the various vessels and really furniture and everything in the first tabernacle, and also even with the establishment of the law in Exodus chapter 19 and so forth. At any rate, verse 19 says, "And after all command was spoken according to the law by Moses to all the people, Lavon Tahaima, taking the blood with water and red wool and hyssop, both the book itself and all the people, he sprinkled, Arantisen." So that's where we were last week, and we pick up then in verse 20 after that with our friend Legolas saying, and now we have just the simple quote from Exodus 24, because that's the scene that the writer to the Hebrews has been remembering. So it's easy enough. Legon, tuta tahaimates diathekes, heis enatelata prasimas hatheas. This, literally, the blood of the covenant, or the covenantal blood, have to supply the verb, is. This is an item of no theological importance, but fairly often in Greek, the relative pronoun will be the wrong case, so to speak. So, heis, which is the relative pronoun, should be hein, which God commanded to you. So it should be accusative, but it's genitive simply because it's been, that's an odd phrase, it's been attracted to the case of its antecedent. So this is the kind of thing that sends cold shivers down the spine of elementary Greek students. So I have not mentioned this yet in my class here in week 9. They're just struggling with the me verbs. So as I like to say to them, couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of guys. So so easy enough. This is the blood of the covenant which God commanded to you, right? Or directed to you. So verse 20, that's pretty straightforward. We just supply the verb, right? So we can press on and do verses 21 and two short sentences. Maybe we'll just pick up 22 as well, even though it's punctuated as a separate sentence. Kai tein skenein de, kai pantatas skewe, tes laitur geas, to haimate hamoyas erantisen, kai skedan en haimati panta katharidzitai, katata naman, kai choris haima techizias u genetai aphasis. So verse 21, remembering that de is post-positive, here it's really post-positive. It's actually the fourth word in. But for translation, that's actually the conjunction that links this sentence with the prior one. So and then we have kai tein skenein kai panta. So we'll take that as both and, right? And both the tent and all ta skewe, this is from skewas, third declension. So this is like ethnos, it follows that pattern, if I could say it that way. So this would parse as neuter plural accusative. It's part of the direct object of the verb, which we haven't got to yet. Both the tent and all the vessels of service, liturgia, means liturgy. That's where we get our word, at least ultimately. The vessels of service, to haimata, dative of means, with blood, hamoios, likewise, erantison, he sprinkled. Talking about Moses still. So again, we're talking about the original establishment and of the Mosaic covenant, the erection of the tabernacle and all the vessels and so forth and so on. This verb, I believe it's from chrontidzo, and without any apparent warning, you double the ro when you make it a past time indicative. So it's just erantison is from chrontidzo. So that's pretty easy. Just a aorist indicative verb and a fairly lengthy direct object, compound direct object, and the dative of means to haimata. And then verse 22, and, now I had to look this word up, skedon is an adverb, it means nearly or almost, and nearly, in or with blood, all things, katharizitai, are being cleansed according to the law, and apart from, now choris takes the genitive, so that's what we have here, a genitive noun, haima tek chizias. This is from blood haima, which is third declension, so you might conceivably recall that the true stem of blood is haimat, because it goes haimas, haimatas, haimati, haima. And then the verbal root to which blood is attached is the verb ech. So, which means to pour out. So, together, this noun means the pouring out of blood or the shedding of blood. So, and apart from the shedding of blood, forgiveness, aphesis, does not happen. Or you could also translate, I think the typical translation is there happens no forgiveness apart from the shedding of blood. And, of course, this is the one shoe, right, which is about to drop in the sort of the typical, if this is true, by how much more will the ministry of Christ fulfill this pattern that the shadow or the example, the copy. See, in the next paragraph, the writer to the Hebrews will call all these Old Testament established rites and rituals, he'll call them copies and patterns of the true reality which has come now only with Christ. Okay, so that's verses 21 and 22. Any questions or comments? Yeah. Joe, go ahead.
So with Moses sprinkling this blood, is he dedicating the people to God in the covenant and then also dedicating the tabernacle for worship?
Yes, and more than dedicating, he's actually cleansing, right? Yeah, I mean, there's the, right. We happen to have an Old Testament specialist in our midst. Reed, do you want to say any more about that, the theology of the sprinkling of the blood? I mean, you don't have to, but since you're here.
It might be also setting it aside, kadosh.
Okay, sanctifying, setting it aside, right, good. Okay, great, yep.
We don't have that verb here.
Yeah, but that's part of the general theology of it, yeah. Right. Good. And again, I think it's important for Lutherans because sometimes we can almost sound Marcionite in our talk about law and gospel that this was God's idea, right? It's only a bad idea now if you go back to it, right? Because who wants the shadow when the reality has come, which is, of course, Colossians and also here more explicitly in Hebrews. So again, it's just very interesting. I mean, to study Hebrews carefully, a Christian would have to be willing to set aside the so what question for a little bit, you know, just to understand carefully the nature of the issue, in a sense what it meant, before you get to what it means. And of course, sometimes people are not willing to do that. They just want to know what difference it makes to their daily life. So, well, you know what? Sometimes that's not the right question. Maybe the right question is, what is God interested in? Oops, sorry, there I go, being theocentric again. I hate it when that happens. I just want to die and go to heaven. Not after a sermon we heard in chapel on Isaiah 55, for crying out loud. Yeah, okay. Which is on iTunes U, by the way. And I think, isn't that right, Reed? Every time they download one of our chapel sermons, they have to pay the preacher like a buck?
Oh, it's gone up to three.
$3 now. Okay, good. Okay, very, very good. Okay. All right. Okay, let's press on. We have a therefore paragraph now at verse 23. So, ananke un ta men hippadegmata ton entois uranois tutois katharidzesthai auta de ta ep urania kratosen thiziais para tautas. Okay, would you like a real verb? Sorry, you have to supply it. But our little friend ananke, necessity, is the clue that you supply. It's a kind of an impersonal construction. Therefore, it is necessary. Okay, and notice that we have, so what we need is an it, for it is necessary. And the it will almost always be an infinitive construction. And notice we have a men and then a de. And so what we actually have is kind of a two-part, really large it. So on the one hand, if this is necessary, on the other hand, this other thing is more necessary. That's kind of the basic structure of the sentence. So, therefore, on the one hand, the patterns of the in these heavenly things to be cleansed. See that? Katharidzesthai is from katharidzo. It's the present, infinitive, could be middle, here almost certainly passive. So the patterns of the things, of these things in the heavenlies, or these heavenly things, on the one hand, if them to be cleansed is necessary, and then comma, de, on the other hand, the heavenly things themselves. Notice that auta there in predicate position with ta ep urania, it's the third person personal pronoun, and it has the intensive force in predicate position. So the heavenly things themselves, it is necessary to be cleansed, kratos en thiziais, by means of better sacrifices, para tautas, than these. So it's quite elliptical, but so does that make sense, everybody? I mean, you need an it, which is generally an infinitive construction, and what you have here is a two-part. On the one hand, those to be cleansed; on the other hand, these to be cleansed by greater sacrifices. So again, it's an argument from the lesser to the greater using a menda construction. And the realities that Moses established are only hippodegmata. They're only copies. They're not the reality that God always had in mind, right, when he showed the pattern to Moses on the mountain, Exodus 25, and said, make these things according to the pattern that you see on the mountain. So Moses actually got a glimpse, apparently. Now, what exactly that was like, who knows? But Moses got a glimpse of the realities that were to come. So this sort of just popped in my head. It's not, maybe not unlike when Jesus says in John 8, Abraham rejoiced to see my day and was glad. So something was going on there up on the mountain with Moses when he saw what emerged down below as the earthly tabernacle. Something he saw up there corresponded to what God would do 14 centuries later, if I could say it that way. Fairly mysterious, right? This, by the way, does not entirely fit well when you use as the artistic motif for depicting biblical narratives precious moments figures. This doesn't work very well. So I just thought I'd say that. So, which is why the people of Israel at the foot of the mountain did not say, aww. Right? Right. I actually saw a precious moments scene of the binding of Isaac. you know? It was just adorable, yeah, yeah. Abraham is crying while he's holding the dagger over his son. It was unbelievable. My wife tells me to knock it off with criticizing the precious moments, but I can't help myself. Any questions about verse 23? It's a little difficult, but I think we've made some sense of it. Anything at all? So, ta hypodegmata is the accusative case subject of the infinitive, right? The passage, the copies to be cleansed, right, was necessary. Right? Okay. Now, let's explain why these had to be with greater sacrifices. So, the verse 24 is a gar statement, right? So here we go. Ugar eis keropoieta, eis ilthen hagia Christos, antitipa ton alethinon, comma, al, eis autantan uranon, nun emphanisthenai, to prosopo tutheu hyper hemon. Wonderful gospel in this last little prepositional phrase. For Christ, get the subject of the verb. Now we actually have a real verb. Christ did not enter into the made with hands holy things, right? A general reference to the tabernacle and all that goes on there. Now let's talk about what those holy things were. They were antitypa. They were, again, I think it's functioning here as a sort of a synonym for hypodegma, a copy or a pattern or something like that. Pattern of the true things, patterns of the true things. So he didn't enter into that. Rather, eis autan tan uranan. Again, the emphatic or intensive use of the predicate position, third person personal pronoun, that is, into heaven itself. And why did he enter? I think probably this infinitive expresses purpose. Now, in order to be manifested, emphanidzo, this, see the theta eta of the aorist passive stem and the nigh ending, this is actually the characteristic form of the aorist infinitive passive. Now, to be manifested. Where? At the face of God. Why? Hyper hemon. I mean, if you're wondering if you have an advocate with the Father, you do, as a matter of fact. And that's what's happening now in the ongoing high priestly mediation of Jesus. So, you know, it's a little trivial, but in the ninth week of the term, is God for you? Oh, yeah, right? At least we can say by faith, no matter what happens in your experience, is God for you? Well, it's hard to believe sometimes, but the answer is, yeah, he is, right? He is at the face of God, right? He has been manifested to the face of God, hyper hemon, on our behalf, right? I wonder what that'll look like in the new creation. Apparently no sun, no gates necessary to the holy city, right? It'll be nice. Questions about verse 24? I think it's pretty straightforward, and it works well if we take the infinitive as purpose. All right, forging ahead, verse 25. Ud hina palakas prosferi heauton, hosper ha archiereus, eis erkata eis ta hagia, kat heniauton en haimata ala trio, epe ede auton palakas pathein apa katabales kosmu. Oh man, this is hard. Not even in order that he might frequently bring forward himself. So this wasn't the reason why Christ was manifested. Or maybe, actually, now that I look at it, taking it back all the way to Ace Aelthen at the beginning of verse 20. He didn't enter. Christ didn't enter. That might make more sense. Into the holy place. Not, he didn't do this in order that he might offer himself palakis, which is an adverb that means frequently. That's not why Christ did it. Just as the chief priest, Ace Irkatai, enters into the holy places, kat heniauton. A heniautos is a year. Okay, and kata plus the accusative can have what the lexicon calls a distributive force, that is, year after year, talking about the Day of Atonement rite, with the blood. What kind of blood? Allotrios means strange or foreign normally, but here it probably just means a different blood or another's blood. In other words, the chief priest doesn't bring his own blood. He brings the blood of that comes from somebody else. That's not what Christ did. He didn't enter into the holy places, that is, into the heavens, heaven itself, in order to, in this inferior way, this preliminary way, to enter himself, to offer himself often, as the chief priest typically does. If that were the case, now verse 26, the first half of verse 26 is a little difficult. I think we kind of have to take it almost as a contrary to fact supposition. Epe means since, so literally ede is the imperfect of day, and we know day as it is necessary. So ede means it was necessary, right? Since it was necessary him frequently to suffer from the foundation of the world. And the only sense I can make of that is that it's part of kind of an implicit contrary to fact conditional sentence. Kind of like, since otherwise it would have been necessary him to suffer many times from the foundation of the world. And this is, by the way, the reaction I often get when we encounter an implicit contrary to facts conditional sentence. People just leave. You know, they just pack up and leave. You know, this is way too, I don't want to do this anymore. So, and see, if it were to nail it down, what particle would we need in the first part of verse 26? If this were going to be an explicit contrary to fact conditional sentence, what particle would we need? Anybody remember? We'd need on. Right. We need on. That would nail it down. But we don't have on. The only sense I could make of it. And you do see any number of contrary to facts in the New Testament that don't have it. It's just sort of the thing you're supposed to be able to figure out, I guess. We do this in English all the time. It's a contrary to fact conditional sentence in English, properly done, is if I were smarter, I would be better at Greek. Right? See? Or if I were Dr. Vells, I would know more about Greek than I do, right? But I'm not. Now, in English, we say, if I was smarter. So we actually use the wrong mood, and it gets the job done. So maybe that's kind of an analogy as to why Greek can just leave off the on, although it is helpful when it's there. Okay. But let's finish off the verse, and then we can stop there. So it's not that. He didn't do it often. Nunin de hapax, but now... Episyn teleaton ionon, eis athetesin tes amartias diates thesias autu pephanerotai. So there's the verb. It's a nice perfect passive form. He has been manifested, okay, and is manifest. But now, once, hapax, at the consummation of the ages, eschatological note, right? This is the already-ness of the reign of God, of Christ's work. At the consummation of the ages, for the setting aside of sins through his blood, he has been and is manifested. Right? And I think we kind of have to take the prepositional phrase, through his blood. Well, it could possibly work if it were adverbial. That is, he has been manifested through, through his sacrifice, maybe? But I wonder if it's just adjectival to athetesis, setting aside. For the setting aside of sin, which is through his sacrifice, he has been manifested. So let's go back and get 25 and 26, and then we'll stop. For not even in order that he might offer himself frequently, just as the chief priest enters into the holy places every year with another's blood, since it would have been necessary for him to suffer from the foundation of the world. So it's not that. But now, once, at the consummation of the ages, He has been manifested for the setting aside of sins. And that setting aside happens through his sacrifice. And that gives us to verse 27. Whew, where we'll pick up next week. All right? Very good. Thank you very much.